Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I did the simulator. That's the pick that jumps. Now, I can't get the damn thing to jump again, and we know how slight it would be, but that's the point. You would go from having one chance to jump up in the lottery to two. And you start talking like that, you can hit needs pretty quickly, and I think fast-track this turnaround. It doesn't have to be 6 years out of the playoffs like San Antonio was in terms of its rebuild. You can get – if you can come out of this with two lottery picks, whether it's, you know, 4 and 13 – not, you know, what you're hoping to avoid, I guess, at this point is going to 8 and staying at 13 with Orlando's pick. Like, that would be the worst case scenario, I suppose, if this all goes through and Orlando can lose its way out of that play-in. But I think the likelihood, I know Orlando's got Sacramento today. They have shown us they're capable of losing the tanking teams. They did the Indiana. I'm not banking on it being that bad, but there are enough good teams left on Orlando's schedule to hope that it continues to go the way it's going. All that said, that's yes. You can come out of this draft perhaps with the lead guard and the big with those two picks, and the higher they are, the better they are in those spots. Now, again, and we had Drew on about this, you're going to be – this draft's so good, you're going to draft best available, you know, probably depending upon where you are rather than four spots. But I think there's a good chance of what you hit both because you need that lead guard, because you need a big, whether it's to play next to Edie or to play Edie's spot. The man has now an elbow injury that he had to have a procedure on. You need a big. And I think you can do that from those spots. And, yeah, man. And so hitting best available and filling needs. I get excited, especially when you look at how the Grizzlies have decided, okay, we're gonna lose the rest of the way. Not going to bring back Jai, everything, whatever. That's done. And the losses are piling up. But then you double it with the way Orlando is now struggling and losing what they hope would be an all-in year. It feels like the Grizzlies are winning. This is the one thing that seems to be going right now in terms of Memphis sports, although some would argue, boy, that's a backwards take. No, it's actually the right take because it's the fast track to getting good again. So let's hope Orlando continues to lose, and obviously the Grizzlies do the same, and that's the way back to something that is fun and positive and productive to talk about.
Jason, we appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. We come back. Let's talk a little bit more about those coaching moves, including USF's decision to hire Chris Mack, as well as taking a look at where we will be watching baseball, because we did see a couple of announcements yesterday that might have actually included putting the fans first. We'll talk about that. Of course, get into tonight's games and tomorrow's games as well during hour number three. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Cobb, we got an issue here. So, George and I were discussing this during the break. Does anyone understand the pick protections? Because what happens if the Magic pull a Mavs? And they go from last in the lottery odds and win the lottery, do the Grizzlies still get the Magic pick?
Let me see if I can decipher that, because it's really convoluted.
Here we go. If you can interpret this, be my guest. The two most favorable of the Grizzlies' first-round picks include the two most favorable of Memphis, the less favorable of Phoenix, and Washington 1 through 8, and or Orlando, then least favorable of all to Charlotte. Can anyone interpret that?
I just thought it was the least favorable of the Suns, the Magic, and the Wizards, right?
They keep their own pick no matter what, right?
Yes.
Okay. So they own that. And then it's the less favorable of Phoenix and Washington 1-8 and Orlando, the least favorable of all to Charlotte.
The Wizards pick alone is protected 1-8.
Correct.
So if that lands in the top 8, I'm cool Washington on that. Retains their pick.
But what happens if Orlando jumps to 3
and Washington
and Washington falls at 4?
Then do you get Phoenix's pick?
I hope not.
Or does it matter because the pick protection on Washington's
right
means
so
it's not going to be conveyed?
So if Washington keeps their pick, but then would you wind up in a situation where Washington gets the 3 and you would get Washington's pick at 4?
So Washington's pick, if it falls in the top 8, so if it's a top 8 pick, it goes to the Knicks, right?
I think if it's a top 8 pick, it's protected and they keep it.
Correct.
That's my understanding.
That is also my understanding.
So it basically, the Grizzlies need this pick to be in the 9 to 14 range.
I think what we clearly need is if the Grizzlies jump, that needs to be with their own pick.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, this league. Just, like, does everyone in an entire sports organization have to be, like, a contracts lawyer?
No, it's a good thing that
can there not be someone that's like, can there not be someone that goes, hey, our product needs to be digestible to idiots like me?
This is the whole reason why Zach Kleiman chose to go to law school as a mechanism of reaching an NBA front office. Because you pretty much have to have a law degree to decipher all the red tape that's required to run an NBA franchise.
I don't know if Tankathon runs all these complex
conditions. I don't think they do. I think they know like basic swaps.
Right, because somehow I just got 1-2 going to Memphis.
And I'm not sure that's possible.
I'm also not sure that's possible. I think the kicker here is that Washington landed at 7. So that pick stays with them, and they're no longer involved in this.
And in this case, Orlando got a miracle.
You're
job.
On the air.
Who is this?
Yeah, DeMichael.
Hey, DeMichael. What's up, man?
Okay, can you explain this?
Okay.
All right. If the Grizzlies, let's say Orlando jumps, Orlando pulls a Mavericks and jumps from 13th in the lottery to 1. Do the Grizzlies get that pick, or does that pick go to Washington?
Washington is preferential. So Washington would get that pick.
Okay, but then would the Grizzlies get, like, let's say the Wizards get jumped by the Magic, but they stay at, like, they get the 4th. Do the Grizzlies get the 4th pick?
Yeah, I believe that's how it works. Yeah, the Wizards would get the preference of the pick between the 3 teams, and then Orlando would be last, Memphis is second, yeah.
So, in the event, because the Wizards are not falling out of the lottery, if the Magic are in the lottery, at the minimum, the Grizzlies do have 2 lottery picks. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah, they get
the two lesser.
They get the most favorite pick between the Magic, the Suns, or the Wizards. If I believe it's got to be outside the top eight. Yeah.
Okay, but so this is where we're confused is, all right, let's use that Magic example where the Magic jumped to one. Let's say the for clarity's sake, the Wizards get the two. Is that Wizards pick not then protected 1 through 8?
No, if the Wizards get two, is it not protected 1 through 8? I believe it is. No, the Wizards have preference, and then it's Memphis, and then it's Orlando after that.
But they can't keep. Can the Wizards? The Wizards couldn't pick 1 and 2, correct? They have to decide.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So yep. Then the two would go to the Grizzlies?
Would go to the Grizzlies. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
All right. I think I get it.
That makes a lot more sense. That is not written down on any of these sites.
Of course it's not.
Because of course not. It can't be. It has to be written in some ridiculous jargon that no one can understand.
All I got from that is there's a chance the Grizzlies could have 2 top 5 picks in the 2026 NBA draft.
That is a takeaway from that.
I don't know what to root for. I mean, I think it seems like the most simple thing to root for is the Grizzlies jump to one on their own pick.
Yes.
Then let the rest sort it out.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's
then,
what I'm rooting for.
Then wait for the draft show or the draft lottery show to announce who is actually going to make the pick, is not going to make the pick, and then they'll tell us on the broadcast, well, this pick's actually going to the Grizzlies.
Well, and the funny thing that, yeah, on the actual draft night, that this whoever the Grizzlies select, the poor guy will have to get up and put on a Washington hat.
Correct.
Or an Orlando hat, and we'll all have to pretend like that's who he was drafted by. And then when we look back on that, on the 2026 draft in 10 years, it'll still say that he wasn't selected by the Grizzlies, even though he was. The NBA's way of doing this is extraordinarily complicated.
I think my hope is that the NBA gets to the point where even they can't read their own protections and they just give the wrong hat. And then we find out like 48 hours later, like, hey, no, that guy's actually on the Grizzlies and that guy's on the Wizards.
Right. Or maybe we'll get to a point where we just do away with the draft altogether, because what other employment groups or agencies let the companies draft their employees? Like, you don't see that in pest control. Terminix doesn't get to select the best pest technician, right? Like, it's a meritocracy. You hire based on how much you can pay. The employees go to the companies where they want to work. You know, I'm saying 10, 15 years down the line, I don't know. Are drafts going to be viewed as an antiquated concept that is discriminatory and, whatever. I'm just saying, like, it's kind of a weird way.
I think that's a pipe dream of the internet. In the end, you would create a system that would only favor the rich.
Well, that's the college sports world we live in already. These guys are employees of
right,
these colleges.
But those are not collectively bargained.
Not yet. Not yet. Give it 5 years, then we will have a collectively bargained professional sports organization that doesn't have a draft. It's going to be called college sports.
You think five?
NBA, for collective bargaining in college, 5 to 10. Yeah, 5 to 10.
I would set the over under at 10.
Okay.
Now, you could talk me into everybody's waiting to get their next TV deal done and then figuring it out. I do think it's where it's headed. There has been no other solution that makes sense to me, but you do also run into this. What if the players don't want to collectively bargain?
Oh, well, you listen to the NCAA. Oh, they don't want this. Players
well, no. I actually, I'm not taking the NCAA. I'm saying if I'm a college athlete right now, why would I want the structure? I'm a free agent literally
great.
Every day, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for most, it's awesome. You also can be told to, hit the road, Jack.
Yeah, but usually those guys usually wind up somewhere else. I mean, our boy AJ Storr, what do you go, 8 for 8?
Yeah, he went, I can't even remember, St. John's to Wisconsin, to Kansas to Ole Miss.
I understand it's more complicated than that. I do, but he did go 8 for 8. I think he went 4 high schools, 4 colleges in 8 years.
Yeah.
I also understand in high school there was like COVID and one of the schools I think shut down, but like he still
you don't gotta try to like glossy that up. It is what it is. Like you are who you are.
He could have stayed at one of them.
Right. Like, right. Right.
He's in business for himself. Like I get it.
I wonder what that transcript looks like.
Oh my God. How many
times did he have to take English?
I was going to say, how many GEs can you take?
Yeah.
How many times did he take college math?
And how many millions of dollars did he make playing basketball?
Yes. You know? I could do college math. I got paid millions.
Count my millions, right?
All right. So this was the other issue I wanted to talk to you about. So South Florida yesterday announces that they're hiring Chris Mack. And while you look at Chris Mack's resume, it is weird how Chris Mack feels like he gets lumped into like the Thad Matta, Chris Holtman, like guys that were like Xavier Butler that kind of flamed out. And while Charleston has not made the tournament since he's been there, like they've still been very good. And you also look at, I think there's an argument, Chris Mack was one of the biggest losers, in at least in sports, during the pandemic, because like they were a one seed at that point. And how much does that change his career? Doesn't get the advantage of that. I understand like Dayton could have an argument there as well. The thing that took me by surprise, do I think Chris Mack is a bad hire? No, but it did feel like they've kind of broken away from their recent formula, which has been successful. I know he has much more of a resume, but it kind of felt to me a lot like when Memphis made the decision to go with Ryan Silverfield over Dan Lanning, because like it broke their formula. I'm not necessarily saying like right or wrong. It just kind of took me by surprise because they've been kind of going young, up-and-comer, and Chris Mack's not that, but he is a proven head coach.
Yeah, so I think the smart thing about going the Chris Mack route is nobody from a high major is going to be banging down the door to give him that next opportunity. Now, if he goes 30-4 next year and he gets a 5 seed, all right, different conversation. But if it's basically just, hey, we think this guy is good enough to win the American every other year, and that's what Chris Mack does, like he's going to bring stability there, because you don't see high majors racing to get retread coaches. But Chris Mack is a pretty good coach, and as you mentioned, he got kind of a raw deal at Louisville. So I think it's a smart hire because it's a high floor, but it's not like this guy's on rocket fuel and it's going to be up and out of there in 1 year like a Brian Hodgson. So I actually think it makes a lot of sense. Like I think it shows, one, they're serious about basketball, and two, it gives them a chance to get a good coach who they could hang on to for 5 or 6 years.
I just don't love the thought process of, like, my deal is, I don't care if my job's a stepping stone job. In the end, if guys see you can coach there and move on, like
they want to go there too. I mean, it's Utah State. Look at Utah State. They're about to have their 5th coach in 7 years. Every single one of them has gone on to have a high major job. You know, it's like Murray State back in the day. Not so much now, but they had a run of like five.
Well, it's
five
like forever.
Coaches,
it was the Dayton job.
Dayton job, yeah. Absolutely.
Again, I want to be very clear. Like Chris Mack's a good coach. It just
you get sick of being the daggum stepping stone after a while. I mean, you look at Arkansas State football. They went from like Hugh Freeze to Brian Harsin to
forgot the Gus Bus.
Gus Malzahn, right? There was 3 in a row there that were like one and done at A State, and it's like okay, at a certain point this gets exhausting. You look at South Florida; they just lost a football coach that they didn't have for very long. Alex Golesh goes to Auburn. Like, if Brian Hartline is anything close to being decent, anything close to decent, he's going to get up and out of there in less than 2 years. So it's like you want to keep doing that over and over and over and over again.
Can I make my argument for I understand it's frustrating. I also understand it is probably most frustrating to your money people, and your money people might have said, get me a coach that's going to stay here 5 or 6 years. I understand the politics of it. I think this world that USF and Memphis find themselves in is just going to be the, you might just have to get job hoppers, because like you're going to be essentially building or like, just like anyone that comes after you, you want to get hired by, like any good players you have, they're going to get gobbled up. Like, I just think like it's, you're going to have to deal with like the perpetual, you're kind of stuck in the middle. And I feel like those jobs lend themselves really well to like the social climber.
Well, I just think there's something to the retread. Look at Miami of Ohio, Travis Steele, flames out at Xavier, right?
Well, I mean,
same school.
You could make the argument, did he flame out or did Xavier, has Xavier fallen on hard times?
I mean, however you want to spin it, you got a guy who's looked at his damaged goods.
By the way, is it true his brother's Croce at Akron?
Yeah. John Gross and Travis Steele, half brothers. Yeah. And they keep coaching against each other in these huge games. Like it's they have the same mom, different dad.
Well, I could do the math on that.
I wanted to explain to make sure you know how half brothers work. Yeah.
No, I could do the math on that one.
I mean, it's possible they could have the same dad and a different mom. I guess they'd have the same last name in that case, probably.
Yeah, that's my point. My point is the last name gave it away.
Yeah, right. But I mean, it would be like you could have the same dad and a different mom.
My buddy Chase and Dylan have the same mom, different dad.
And they have the same last name or no?
No, different.
Right.
And they have the coaches have the same setup, right?
Yeah, no, it's the same mom, different dad. Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, I feel like that's a factoid that doesn't get like blasted out enough.
Yeah, the same situation too. They're both high major retreads who are killing it at Mac jobs. Like John Gross, you know, he didn't last long at Illinois, and now he's been a force at Akron. So like that's why I think this makes sense for South Florida. I get your point. Like being a stepping stone isn't the worst thing because you're getting like fresh, young, like high ceiling coaches. But if you've got a good coach who's looked at as damaged goods that is blacklisted at the high major level for whatever reason, like I know Memphis fans are thinking they're maybe envisioning Tubby Smith, and it's like, well, that clearly didn't work out, but I think that was different. I think that was a coach who was at the sunset, the twilight of their career, who was kind of out of gas, didn't have what it took. You know, whereas you get a Chris Mack, he's still in his early 50s. Like, he still feels like he's got a lot to prove.
No, I mean, and there is an argument where Chris Mack treats it like, this is my last chance to get one more high major job. And, like, you'd find yourself in the same spot. Again, I don't know. It went against the type of hire that they've been making in the big sports the last, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it was less imaginative. Charlotte going with Wes Miller, interesting. I think it's a somewhat serious hire that, like, I don't think Charlotte can be that much worse. But at the same time,
I'm just loving him going through the UNC system.
Yeah,
Wilmington's next.
Although, yeah, he went to UNC.
Correct.
Right?
Coached at Greensboro.
Right.
UNCG.
He was also on staff at High Point, which is not in the system, but it's in the state.
Correct.
And Elon, not in the system, but also in the state. Yeah.
Correct.
So Wes Miller has now hit at least half the D1s in the state of North Carolina.
All right, how much stock are we putting into this? Pete Nakos. NC State's going to take a swing at Josh Schertz.
I mean, if Josh Schertz didn't want to go for any of the other jobs that were open this cycle, why would he? Is there a connection there?
Hell hath no fury like the scorned lover.
I mean, that's true. I mean, like, NC State
could go full BYU. when Pope left. Yeah. All right, boys, get the checkbooks out.
It's funny. I actually think there's something to that because of the mentality of that fan base of like.
Now, is it sustainable? I have no idea. You better pay it off early.
Yeah, right. But you get that sort of, hey, we're mad boost. You know, I think we saw it at Ole Miss. Like, granted, they didn't go out and try to hire, you know, some crazy rock star football.
No,
coach,
but I mean, but they'll tell you their money went up, the donations.
Exactly,
went up.
Exactly. And that's the point. Is like you get mad now that Will Wade's gone. All right, maybe it actually helps you. maybe it actually helps you because you're so mad that you start donating money, and then you all of a sudden, oh, we're in a different stratosphere in terms of who we can attract as a coach because Will Wade made us so mad that we got serious.
Maybe that's like what the Will Wades and the Lane Kiffins are good for. Like just getting you so upset that it pushes you to greatness with your wallet.
Yeah, right? Like if Josh Heupel were to up and leave, Tennessee fans would be like, oh, whatever. Like, all right, you know.
All right. This one other thing before we get to take a break and get to tonight's games. All right. So this yesterday from Mari Brown at Forbes, DirecTV announced a new agreement that delivers 9 new channels for MLB teams. Fans of the Reds, Tigers, Royals, Marlins, Brewers, Mariners, Cardinals, Rays, and Nationals now have uninterrupted access to their local games in each club's home territory. Today's announcement also enables DirecTV streaming customers to add MLB TV to watch out-of-market games for 30 teams. I also mentioned yesterday on the show, Cobb, DirecTV like sent the email like, do you want extra innings for free? And I'm like, what's the catch? I think there is no catch. I think they're just trying to get as many people to watch baseball. My slightly woke take on this is, they're trying to get as many people to watch baseball as possible because they know a labor stoppage is coming and, like, maybe throw the fans a bone here. Because
I actually think it's great. Okay, so first off, word to the wise, if you have T-Mobile, Jeffrey, what
correct.
What mobile?
No, I'm AT&T, but I do know you can get MLB TV.
I have it, right? Like, I'm going to watch the Cardinals game whenever the show ends because I've got this free access to MLB TV if you have T-Mobile. It's crazy. I don't understand how it works, but I'm not arguing. But then also, like, it's never been easier to watch Major League Baseball. You got this whole thing that you're talking about, and then you can buy, like, if you're in market but you don't have cable, like, you can buy the MLB TV Cardinals plan or whatever,
right?
And you get the Cardinals and all the other games.
Don't want to spend $200 to watch a team lose 95 games.
Hey, it's the rebirth. It's the rebirth.
Well, what I can't figure out, though, is this still considered in market? But I think I might be okay regardless, because either it's in market and I get the games, or it's out of market and therefore I shouldn't be blacked out, right, on extra innings?
So how does extra innings work? Is it like a whip-around sort of deal? Or
no,
like,
extra
what is
innings
it?
Is like a Sunday ticket. Every
oh, but it's just that's just what they call it when it's through the cable provider.
Correct.
Because like
it's
if
home
you buy
broadcast
you buy MLB
only.
TV, you're
right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's technically through DirecTV itself. All right, let's get into the games tonight. We'll talk about it next with Cobb right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, Cobb. And then there were 16. So we got 4 tonight. We will start in front of dozens of people in San Jose, California at 3:10 Pacific time, Texas and Purdue. It appears so far the SpongeBob SquarePants pick of the week is Purdue laying the points. It appears
8.5-point spread.
The entire public is on them.
I don't hate it. I don't know that Texas is equipped to contend with a well-oiled Purdue offense that can hurt you in a variety of ways, because it's fantastic that Texas has made it to this point. Nobody expected it when they lost to Ole Miss in the first round of the SEC tournament. But as great as this little NCAA tournament run has been, this Texas team is still not very good at defense. And I don't think they're going to hold Purdue under 80. And I don't think I see Texas getting into that realm of scoring. So Yeah, I just it's amazing. Like I said, never would have thought when I was at Bridgestone Arena for Texas Ole Miss that this Texas team would still be here, but I think the run ends tonight.
The only thing that gives me a little concern is the Purdue team. Like, Texas still has athletes, and Purdue is not supremely athletic. The other thing that's like the other thing that's given me a little concern is it's really just the fact that everybody's on them.
So has the line moved in a considerable
I
way?
I want to say maybe a point and a half. Let's see.
Yeah.
All right. Opened at 6.5 and it's moved to 7.5.
I've got it at 8.5. I don't know what book I'm looking at. I'm just looking at the CBS scoreboard. So I don't know who we're partnered with. But I mean, if you could get it at 7 or 7.5, I would do it. I just don't think Texas is good. I think Texas got a really favorable
draw. I'm with you on this. BYU was probably the weakest of the sixes.
Yep.
And then
Gonzaga had no business being a three. They had no business being a three.
I told you this. Like, I know what good Gonzaga looks like. That
was not it.
Like, at all. I still bet on Gonzaga because I've been also trying to get Texas's scalp ever since the NC State game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked that they chose this game for CBS because I don't think it's a compelling game. It's Texas. I get it.
No. They chose San Jose. I don't think they've been flopping networks on the same the regional locations.
Oh, they had to do Arkansas,
correct.
Arizona, right?
Because they
won
Arkansas, Arizona for the night game. I don't think it had anything with Texas or Purdue.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah, I work for a television company, but you know exponentially more about television than I do.
It's my lifeblood. All right, we've also got Iowa and Nebraska. This is the TBS True TV simulcast. These two teams split during the regular season. Right now, line open, Nebraska -3. Consensus appears to be Nebraska 1.5. I don't know. These two teams feel dead even.
Yeah, they really do. It's a closer matchup than the seedings would suggest.
Yeah.
So Nebraska got a 4 seed based on its resume, not based on its like advanced metrics. Like in terms of actual performance quality, they're more like a 6 seed. And then it's kind of the inverse of Iowa. Like the advanced metrics loved them all year, had them closer to a 6 just in terms of KenPom, Torvik, the offensive efficiency. The problem was they couldn't get over the hump against anybody good.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't actually beat a good team. So their resume suffered and they ended up as a 9 seed. Well, they finally got over the hump. They beat Florida. They beat a #1 seed in the second round. So now you have two like really evenly matched teams that happen to be separated by 5 seed lines. I understand, you know, maybe not Nebraska gets the edge because it's like, well, they have a higher like body of work just in terms of beating quality opponents this year. But look at what Iowa just did. That team is riding in here with a ton of confidence, having taken down Florida. So, and Bennett Sturts hadn't even been playing very well. Like, and they're still
they still
beat Florida.
Like, he certainly has not been shooting the basketball great.
So I kind of agree with the toss-up logic here. I don't know why. I'm kind of leaning ever so slightly towards Nebraska.
I've had the theory. We treated Nebraska basketball like we treated Indiana football.
Like, okay, when's the bottom going to fall out?
Right.
All right.
But while they lost, was it 6 of their last 12?
Yeah.
Nebraska, like if you went through their losses, it's like, all right, they lost by 3 at Michigan. They lost by 8 to Illinois. That was a home game. They lost in overtime to Purdue. They
tough
lost
games against good teams, yeah.
They lost to Iowa on the road, and then they lost to UCLA on the road in the middle of the USC-UCLA split that everybody has. And it's like, all right, every single team that they lost to was in the NCAA tournament, and I think 5 of the 6 are still playing.
Yeah, and a lot of those were single-digit losses.
Right.
So, yeah. The comparison, I mean, that is the comparison. This is a school with zero basketball history, much like Indiana has zero football history, and they have somehow found a way to be here pretty close to the end. So unbelievable story. I mean, this team had never won an NCAA tournament game before last week. And I tell you, I mean, when I was in town a couple of years ago when Nebraska played in Memphis the first round, yeah, it blew my mind. Like, I had no idea.
They're starving.
That they cared. Right. Like, I knew they were like a huge football, volleyball school. Like, I never questioned like the trueness and the
passion.
And, like, yeah, right. Of like Nebraska fans. I just didn't know that it translated to basketball. Like, I didn't know that they cared because they'd never been good at it. So why would they care? You know? But it blew my mind seeing that crowd in Memphis. And then this past weekend in Oklahoma City, like, whoa, like they completely took over that city. Now it's like, it's to a point now where they're playing in Houston. Houston's also playing in Houston this week. And it's like, how tough of a ticket is that going to be? Cause you got, you know, all these Houston fans trying to get in the building. And then you got Nebraska and Iowa fans who aren't horribly far away, who have never been this far before. You know, Iowa, it's been since 99 since they've made the Sweet 16. So it's like, I think the atmosphere at these games in Houston is going to be unreal.
Well, I'm also curious to what it looks like. I think your instinct's like, well, Houston's playing in Houston. They'll have a huge, like, advantage. But, I mean, I don't think there's a secondary market ticket price that's going to stop Nebraska fans. Like, I am curious to see, like, what the splits look like.
Boy, I hope the Toyota Center stocked up on Busch Light because you got Nebraska and Iowa. I mean, my gosh.
I know Iowa State loves their Busch Light. Is the same thing?
It's the corn country, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like derived from like corn husks or what, but the folks up in that region,
they love
the Busch.
I just remember when Iowa State came to the first Liberty Bowl, they drank all of Beale Street out of Busch Light. All right, then our night games are Arkansas and Arizona and San Jose, and then Illinois and Houston. So I actually thought the two most impressive teams last weekend were Illinois and Houston. I understand level of competition, whatnot, but like they like Illinois got to play two double-digit seeds. I'm totally aware of that. But they were so businesslike, and same thing with Houston. Just completely businesslike. It's kind of a shame that they have to play each other because, like, I do think they're both kind of playing really well.
Yo, this is like a Final Four caliber matchup, and it's happening in the Sweet 16. Like, absolutely.
Like, I do think that's going to be a great game. While I am totally in the bag for Mr. Acuff, I am a little worried about the depth of Arizona. Like, this is the ultimate test for me of my Tommy Lloyd. Like, all right, buddy, prove it.
Well, it's in a better place than it was because down the stretch of the regular season, Koa Pete was hurt.
Yes.
Their second small forward was hurt.
And he even made reference to, like, not really saying load management, but he's like, the key's making sure we got everybody healthy in the tournament.
Yeah, which I think they're in a good spot there now.
I did not love their Utah State game. Final score was misleading.
Yeah, there were a lot of games like that in the first weekend where the better seeded team ends up winning by a margin that looks comfortable.
Yeah.
But then if you actually watch the whole game, you're like, oh, man, that was way closer than the final score indicated.
Yeah.
Which is why I haven't gotten all into this narrative like, oh, there's so many blowouts. And it's like, well, yeah, but a lot of these games were close at the under four timeout or the under eight timeout. I just think Utah State may have been a little underseeded. I think that was well-coached, pretty good Utah State team. My excitement for tonight's games, it's like, well, Illinois-Houston, I mean, we spent a few minutes in one of the earlier segments talking about the NBA draft ramifications of Arkansas-Arizona, of course, right? But then look at Illinois-Houston. I mean, you got Wagler versus Flemings. I mean, and then Chris Sinak is playing in that game. And, you know, I think David Markovich for Illinois could be an NBA player. So a lot of talent in that game, just so much talent. And every rebound going to be a fight to the death. Like, that is going to be – this is going to be a football game. I hope – one thing that I've actually been really impressed with in this NCAA tournament, for the most part, not 100%. You're never going to get 100% on this. But I feel like it's been pretty well officiated in the sense of we haven't been blowing the whistle every time skin touches skin, which is the best way to kill a vibe in basketball.
I agree with you on the whistle. The tournament reviews are out of hand.
Well, it's not as bad as the SEC tournament. Well, the SEC tournament was unwatchable. It was horrible.
No, I will grant you that. I do also wonder, though, if part of it was you were in the building. Cobb, the fact that we literally can't go a possession in the last minute without checking the clock is insane.
Ugh. It's why the ending to Kentucky Santa Clara was so refreshing. Like, we didn't have
time.
It all happened.
We know what happened there. I find myself, I like the actual order of tonight because the game that I'm least excited about is Texas and Purdue, but it's fine. It starts our night off. You know what I mean?
Get it out of the way.
Nebraska and Vandy was my favorite game of the weekend last week. I thought that was an awesome basketball game. I enjoyed every second of it. I'm so pumped good. For Arkansas and Arizona because it's like the ultimate of best team maybe versus best player right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fun one, and then I just think it's a heavyweight fight tonight.
Yeah, if you're a Grizzlies fan who doesn't particularly care about college basketball, you got to watch these games in the late window because you got Acuff, you got Malik Thomas, you have Braden Burries, you have Koa Pete, you have Keaton Wogler, you have Kingston Flemings, Chris Sinak. I probably didn't even mention somebody, but that's like seven. Like,
well, that speaks to your point. Like, we might have missed somebody.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. That's the upshot to the chalky Sweet 16 is
and
the talent.
I thought the round of 32 was pretty good. We had a couple of blowouts, but I mean, I thought on average we had basically four good games each day.
Yeah, games coming down to the wire. Yeah. It was a good mix. Like, yeah, you had some blowouts, but you also had your Iowa, Florida, your St. John's, Kansas, your Nebraska, Vandy. I mean,
I'm on record as St. John's, Kansas stunk, but it had a good ending.
It did, right? This was all that matters.
It was a brutal game. Yeah. All right, buddy. We'll let you go get ready for work.
All right, man. Sounds good.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We got to go to Major League Baseball players. So one of the byproducts of the new automated ball strike system was they had to accurately measure each player. You'll never believe this, but a lot of people were lying about their height.
Shocking.
Gavin Lux, this is a tough one. Went
stop.
6'2 to 5'11.
Oh.
Connor Wong. 6'1 to 5'10.
That one, okay. That one, yeah, I see that. That's fair.
Just go 6 feet. Just say 6 feet.
Yeah.
Bregman, 6 feet to 5'10. Fine.
Okay.
Harper, 6'3 to 6'1.
Come on, man.
This is
get
the one
together. You're like, still 6'1, brother.
Giancarlo Stanton, this is unnecessary. Why do you need to be 6'6? He was 6'5.
Yeah, he's also yoked.
Like, what does it matter? Like, Bellinger went from 6'4 to 6'3. Goldie from 6'3 to 6'2. This was a tough one. Bo Naylor, shame on you.
No.
6 feet to 5'9.
Oh! You know what? He just does not want to be associated with us short kings.
Be who you are, my man. I also want this for the NBA.
Please.
I want NBA height and weight because I think the only ones I kind of trust, shockingly, are the NFL because most of them get measured at the combine.
Yeah, and they kind of just stick with that for
correct
the career.
Like that's usually what happens. Want to thank David Cobb for being on the program as well as Jason Smith. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.